it's about accepting and understanding that I am here and I have as much right to be here as you do.
A string of hate crimes leads to diversity discussions.
Student leaders work to get out the vote.
And the global warming fight hits campus. TERP Weekly Edition starts now.
This is TERP Weekly Edition, a look at the issues and news in and around the University of Maryland College Park. TERP Weekly Edition is produced by students of the Philip Merrill College of Journalism in cooperation with WMUC Radio.
Hello, and welcome to TERP Weekly Edition. I'm Susan Frantz.
And I'm Eric Schaefer. Hate crimes are a hot-button issue on campus. Some of those include this semester's appearance of a noose at Nimbaru Culture Center and a car vandalized with swastikas on Frat Row. A number of recent events on campus have tried to address the problem. Just last week, the American Studies Department hosted Resisting Hate, Doing Diversity. TERP Weekly Edition's Ashley Sharif was there and says the talk was about tolerance, acceptance, and education.
A panel of university faculty and students tackled the issue of diversity at the university. Despite the crimes on campus this semester, the mood was optimistic. Special education doctoral candidate Asha Latif Dobbs.
I think we're improving every day. I was a little dismayed, obviously, with the news, but I was inspired, encouraged by the counteractions, by the response.
Dobbs, president of the Black Graduate Student Association, says she hopes one day groups like hers, which focus on one race, will no longer be necessary.
It's not de facto segregation. It's an issue of comfort. And when we get to the point where people no longer feel marginalized, then we'll no longer need these groups.
Although Dobbs says the appearance of a noose at Nimbaru Cultural Center brought people together in its aftermath, the unity is bittersweet.
They go, this is great, we've achieved diversity. And then somebody reminds us that there are people here that don't want us to be here.
After the panel discussion, the audience was split into groups to discuss and list ways to go out and promote diversity on their own. On the list, adding new diversity requirements to core requirements, and more advertising for specific events that promote diversity. Students who attended the event found it both educational and important.
I feel that meetings like this really help us come together on situations that may hurt other people, that other people are scared to come forth.
American Studies doctoral candidate Kristen Williams says the panel really zeroed in on the issues affecting students and staff.
The panelists did a really great job in talking about some of the issues, really hitting on the major points that are affecting the institution right now.
American Studies doctoral candidate and panelist Amit Ali says a large part of promoting diversity starts with respect.
We need to have a set of norms in place wherein people feel like it's not okay to engage in any kind of disrespect, whether that be something as minor as using a word or as major as engaging in sexual violence.
Although the campus has been coined Diversity University by some, Associate Director of the Women's Studies Department, Laura Nichols, says the numbers don't always match reality.
I think we have taken pride in the way we measure it in numbers, measure it in classes, but as far as the climate of community and the way we relate to each other, I think it's a work in progress.
Nichols says she would like to see more diversity taught in the classes offered for each major on campus. Almost all of the panelists agree that even though the university does have a degree of diversity, there's always room to grow.
We're a lot better than we were 20 years ago, but there's a lot to do still.
In College Park, this is Ashley Sharif for TERP Weekly Edition.
A candlelight vigil in memory of freshman Lance Healy was held in front of Centerville Hall on Wednesday. Resident assistants organized the vigil for students to come together to share memories and support friends and family of Healy. Healy committed suicide and was found dead in his Centerville Hall dorm on November 1st. One student shared her thoughts on moving forward.
I just think that it's really, really sad, and I hope that no one else has to go through it, and anyone who's feeling that way can, you know, find some kind of, you know, way to get out of it.
A funeral for Healy was held last week in his home state of Massachusetts. The Student Government Association had high hopes for a record student turnout in the College Park City Council elections. They spent months working on a voter registration drive. But as TERP Weekly Edition's April Failing found out on Election Day, things didn't go quite as planned.
This is Joanna from the Student Government Association. And I'm just calling to remind you to vote tomorrow.
It was a grueling 24 hours for the Student Government Association. It started Monday night in the SGA office, where volunteers made more than 800 calls to registered students.
Is that correct? Okay, so your polling place will be Davis Hall.
Spirits were high, and for good reason. SGA City Council student liaison Danielle Kogut helped register more than 1,000 students to vote in College Park. She was confident the SGA could get 200 students to the polls.
If we call students to talk to them one-on-one, then that not only gives us a number of how many people want to go down with us at that time, but it also sort of psychologically commits them to being there.
Tuesday morning, election day. 90 students told the phone bankers they would show up to vote, and the SGA drive is on round two. The SGA spent just over $300 on four vans to take students to the polls. Senior Aaron Kern volunteered to drive.
We're right in front of Ellicott Hall between Ellicott and Bird Stadium. We are going to be driving from this location down to City Hall.
Freshman Brian Lerner showed up for a ride. He says the SGA effort made all the difference for him.
I wouldn't have been able to get to a poll if the SGA wasn't doing the drives and everything. All the publicity from the SGA and like their website, stuff like that, made it easier to see what was going on.
But as the day wore on, many of the vans stood empty and students rushed by without stopping.
Would you be interested in voting today?
SGA officers did rustle up a few more students with phone calls.
I'm calling to see if you've actually voted yet in the city council election.
But by the time the polls closed at 8 p.m., the vans had transported fewer than 30 students. SGA Director of Governmental Affairs Matt Stern was disappointed with the low turnout, but he says the razor-thin finish in District 2 shows how even a few student votes can make a difference.
Even though we didn't get the bulk of them out, there were a lot of students who otherwise wouldn't have gone out, and that's something that we can be proud of.
Given that the SGA says only two students voted in the 2005 city council election, it's hard to argue with that. From College Park, I'm April Failing for TERP Weekly Edition.
The results are in, and there are some new young faces on the College Park City Council. 26-year-old Jonathan Molinato and 32-year-old Patrick Woljohn both took District 1 seats in last Tuesday's election. Molinato says he'll work to improve the council's strained relationship with the university. Bob Catlin also held on to his District 2 seat. Leadership in Districts 3 and 4 is unchanged as both sets of council members ran unopposed. For complete election results, visit our website at www.twe.umd.edu. A couple weekends ago, the University of Maryland was full of students who traveled from all over the country to attend PowerShift, a conference that deals with issues of global warming. The organizing committee of the conference set three goals: to demand the U.S. presidential candidates and Congress to consider the severity of global warming, to empower a diverse group of young activists, and to make sure that the issue of global warming is addressed by representatives from every part of the country. More from TERP Weekly Edition's Shira Yukov.
PowerShift, the first national youth summit to solve the climate crisis, emphasized the importance of young, emerging leaders participating in solving environmental problems. Participants from colleges and universities throughout the United States discussed why they chose to attend PowerShift.
We have an administration that isn't particularly helpful, and so we were trying to find a lot of new arguments, new ways to get funding.
What we want to do is bring a bunch of younger people down to get trained to work in our university and also to find out what's going on in the national and regional movements.
We also are interested in just seeing what other schools are doing to get like some best practices and ideas for what we can do better.
Students from the College of William and Mary used the conference as an opportunity to network with representatives from other schools.
We heard a report by Ohio University's sustainability coordinator, and we really want to get a sustainability coordinator. And it was interesting to see that they were a school like us, that they managed to do it, so it kind of gives us an incentive. And they actually promised us that Ohio University's president would be able to write our president a letter.
And it wasn't just talk. There were workshops that helped participants come up with ways to turn the discussions throughout the weekend into reality. Among those leading a workshop, Nikki Henderson with the organization Green for All.
This workshop is about green collar jobs, and we're just trying to give some definitions about green collar jobs so that people have something to work with, and then also asking them about how college students can get involved, because one of the things we're really trying to figure out is how to integrate the green collar jobs campaign along with the Campus Climate Challenge.
Matthew Egan, a member of the California Student Sustainability Coalition, explains the goal of green collar jobs.
You take people in neighborhoods and in communities that don't have as many opportunities as others do, and you teach them how to build solar panels. You teach them how to install solar panels. You teach them how to make the community greener. take them out of their bad neighborhood, you take them out of their surroundings, you put them into somewhere where they can make a difference against global warming.
The final day of the conference was spent on Capitol Hill. College students from all 50 states met with senators and representatives to lobby for effective solutions to the climate crisis. For Terp Weekly Edition, this is Shira Yudkoff, College Park.
Think college students are apathetic, ignorant, or just don't care? Well, according to a new study from the Center of Information and Research on Civic Learning and Engagement, or CIRCLE, at the University of Maryland, college students are more engaged in politics and community service than their Generation X counterparts of more than 15 years ago. The study looked at about 12 colleges nationwide, including Maryland's College Park campus. The study originated at the university's School of Public Policy. Researchers say that terrorist attacks, 24-hour news channels, and intensely contested elections have changed college students' role in American politics and community.
Coming up, 90s rock stars visit College Park. We have a conversation with them.
And a legend remembered. This is Terp Weekly Edition.
I close my eyes and I see a freak. I think it's me and I'm afraid to speak. I keep on going from weak to weakness, way out in line. Dreaming lives we could have had before. The heat is broke down, open doorways, frenzy.
Third Eye Blind was one of the biggest rock bands of the 90s, with number one hits like Semi-Charmed Life and Jumper. They raced to the top of the charts. It may be a new century, but the group still has lots of dedicated fans. Third Eye Blind played out Ritchie Coliseum to a sold-out crowd last week, and Terp Weekly Edition's Kim Kaplan and Ashley Sharif sat down with guitarist Tony Fredinelli.
What'd you guys get here? Have you been to Maryland ever before?
Yeah, we've been here a lot. I mean, over the course of 10 years.
What do you think of the campus?
I like it. It seems nice.
How do you guys like D.C.?
Well, I always love D.C. We usually play at 9:30 Club. We played some radio shows before for D.C. 101. It's always been a great area for us.
What do you guys hope that the audience is going to get out of this tour in particular?
Sharing energy, you know, recharging their batteries since they're having to wait so long for a record.
Do you guys have a lot of songs, though, ready for an album?
We have a lot of music tracks, but again, and then we may go with those, we may re-record them. Just waiting for our producer to tell us what we're doing.
Do you guys write with Steven?
I wrote some songs with Steven, some of them he wrote alone. And one of them was written by our bass player, our old bass player.
Have you been with the band since the beginning?
No, not since the band broke. I was in the band early on. Like, I actually played the first gig this band ever played with Steven. Then I took off, and then this guy Kevin was in there. So I've been back since the end of 99.
Did you guys get sick of playing, like, Semi-Charmed Life and those kind of songs, or what do you do to keep it fun?
Stay in the moment. It remains fun so long as you don't start letting your mind take you off into thinking about, like, oh, wow, this song, or what's happening next, or what happened, or what am I doing later?
Do you think the changes in the industry on a whole have hurt the band or changed things or made it better?
It's interesting. We've become more credible to people somehow with time. Because we were kind of blown up as a big media thing at first, and then people started to dig into the lyrics and the songs more, and they realized there's more there than just doot.
And I guess just the last thing is, you guys aren't with a major record label anymore.
No, we're not sure exactly how we wanted to approach this next record. We've been approached by record labels, but nowadays record labels don't count for much, so.
Yeah. Do you think maybe that's part of the reason why you guys don't know exactly when it's coming out and stuff?
No, just our singer, even if we had a label, he'd still be doing the same thing. He needs to finish his lyrics.
Vice President for Student Affairs Linda Clement could become the owner of a brand new Volvo every 3 years for a long, long time. Clement is a semi-finalist in the environment category of the Volvo for Life Awards for Campus Activism for the Environment. If she wins, Clement will receive $100,000 and a new Volvo every 3 years for the rest of her life. Clement has improved recycling and composting during her time at the university. Clement said she was honored by the nomination, but gave credit to her entire staff. She was nominated by her co-workers at the Student Affairs Office, but now must rely on the public in an online vote in order to advance. Clement has a tough road to the finals, with competition including the founder of an environmental justice advocacy organization and the organizer of the annual Olympic Coast Cleanup. Voting started November 1st and ends January 7th. The finalists will be announced on February 8th. Winners will be announced March 20th.
Anyone who's lived in the area knows there was one columnist who was the voice of D.C. sports, Shirley Povich. He worked at the Washington Post for over 75 years until his death in 1998. I was there as the Philip Merrill College of Journalism honored him by bringing some of the greatest minds in the business to talk about the man behind the column.
Ben Brantley joined the Washington Post in 1947. Decades before he became executive editor and helped expose Watergate, there was only one face of that paper, Povich.
Shirley Povich kept the place afloat. That's what he did.
But for Kevin Blackstone, a former sports columnist who now commentates for ESPN, he meant a lot more than just a sports writer.
I didn't really grow up wanting to write sports. I grew up as a Watergate baby. I knew then that I wanted to be a journalist who was going to write things that were going to change the world. And he was my evidence that I could actually make a difference writing about sports.
Shirley's son, Maury, who hosts his own daytime talk show, says he remembers so vividly how his father would write six columns a week.
He thought this was kind of like a symphony. He thought this was music, and I would just sit here and watch him, but I can tell that every person who ever plied this art had to go through the same pain, the same agony, and try to hear the same music that he did.
An interesting question arose. Could Povich work in this synergenic world of 24-hour sports news? Michael Wilbon, co-host of ESPN's Pardon the Interruption, answered, "You can't tell."
To me, it's akin to asking, you know, could Lou Gehrig be a great baseball player if he was born in 1978 and not, you know, 1911?
What was certain was the impact that Povich had on his readers. Maury says after his father's death in 1998, he received some startling letters.
There were so many people who wrote saying that they learned to read from my father.
Imagine, ESPN commentators, a hero of the Watergate investigation, and a daytime talk host. Only a man like Shirley could bring these people together. For pictures and additional clips from the event, visit our website at www.twe.umd.edu.
It's a serious offense at the University of Maryland, one that can land you in front of the Honor Council, plagiarism. It's now the center of a debate in the University Senate. The University Senate met last Thursday over the use of SafeAssign, a plagiarism detecting software available through Blackboard. Graduate student teaching assistants support the idea because they say it would decrease their workload. But some professors are concerned the program could give the impression that all students are plagiarism suspects. Graduate student government president Laura Moore proposed the program in January. Moore says she's heard only positive reviews from TAs who use the program. SGA President Andrew Friedson says if TAs are required to use the program, it sends a message that they expect students to cheat.
Using a computer may soon get easier and more practical for the blind, and the university may be able to take some of the credit. That's because Maryland is one of five universities receiving a portion of a three-year, $330,000 National Science Foundation grant to help develop an instrument that may ultimately make Braille keyboards a thing of the past. Noted University bioengineer Professor Lee Apps is one of the key members of the team. The goal of the project? To help visually impaired people use computers and the internet by creating a three-layer film that can be linked with various devices. The creation may also be useful in robotics, virtual reality, and medical applications.
Coming up, help for graduating seniors.
And why are tattoos so popular? This is Chirp Weekly Edition. Stay with us.
This is Chirp Weekly Edition. I'm Susan Friends. In case you've lost track of time, there are just about 3 weeks left in the fall semester. And for seniors, it's as much a time for panic as relief. The reason? Graduation isn't far away, and there's worry about what happens after you get a diploma. Terp Weekly Edition's Kim Kaplan spoke with the university's Career Center to find out what students can do to alleviate those post-graduation fears.
Stephanie Madison is a senior who, like many others, has changed her mind about her career path a number of times. As a freshman, she was interested in environmental law and policy. In her sophomore and junior years, her focus turned to economics. Today, she's not quite sure what she wants to do.
I was all set for getting my PhD, and I realized I wasn't cut out for it. And so now I'm trying to reevaluate my situation and see what I can do with an undergraduate in economics. So I'm considering business school and possibly going into finance.
Stephanie says that uncertainty is stressful.
Suddenly I'm going into the real world next year and I'm so confused and I have to decide whether I have to take my GREs or what kind of scores for what kind of school, and certain schools require certain backgrounds and I'm afraid now I don't have the right stuff I need.
So what can she do?
Maybe I'll go to Vegas this weekend and get married, find someone who supports me, and I'll be set.
Luckily, Stephanie and other students have another option. Carol Monocle, who has worked at the University Career Center for 20 years, says they have many resources that can help students explore possible career paths. One of these is FOCUS, an interest inventory program that matches a student's interests and strengths with potential jobs.
The big thing is they're trying to help you figure out a focus.
After completing the program, the center provides suggestions about internships or part-time jobs. They're opportunities which give students a chance to get a better idea about whether a certain career path is for them. For students who waited until the middle of senior year to begin this exploratory process, Monocle says their externship program is also a useful tool.
Externships are job shadowing. We get volunteers, alums, employers to say they will allow a student to shadow them for 1 or 2 days usually. The deadline actually for that is November 21st this year.
Monocle says students can sign up for as many externships as they want as a way to test out job ideas. She says students frequently find a mentor this way and in the process often find their career path. Even if you graduate and are still unsure about exactly what you want to do, Monocle says not to worry. She says that first job after school is just that, an initial chance to begin somewhere.
The other day I was calling it the starter career. Some students feel like, well, I have to make this decision because this is it for life, and that's not true. Most of us are career changers.
Monocle says the Career Center would like students to begin exploring careers earlier rather than later.
My big wish is that students would come in well before their senior year and start learning how to do resumes, interviewing, how to plan a career, so they're not putting it off till when there's a whole lot to do.
For more information on the Career Center and its services, you can visit www.careercenter.umd.edu. In College Park, I'm Kim Kaplan for Terp Weekly Edition.
Recent dorm and apartment fires, most notably the fire that gutted a Hartwick Tower apartment in early October, have put fire safety in the spotlight. The Department of Resident Life has stepped up their prevention efforts by replacing and upgrading dorm fire alarm systems. The next dorm in line for improvements is La Plata, which will be receiving a new control panel for the alarm system over winter break. Resident Life says the upgrades are not because of any immediate fire danger, but part of a proactive approach to prevent fires. La Plata will be the 11th hall to receive an upgrade to its smoke detecting and alarm. The cost of making the upgrades is estimated between $70,000 and $90,000.
The project is expected to cost about $28,000.
Ever notice a flower tattoo on someone's hip or barbed wire tattooed around their arm? Chances are you have, or at least something like it. A study conducted by professors from Northwestern University and the University of Chicago found almost 24% of people in the U.S. have a tattoo. Terp Weekly Edition's Carrie Dandino begins a two-part series this week to find out why tattoos are leaving their mark.
I have one on my arm. It's a Persian word.
If I get a tattoo, it'll be something meaningful.
I have the crest of my grandfather's village.
There wasn't anything that I want for the rest of my life.
I have a tattoo on my chest.
I do not have any tattoos.
I also have one on my foot.
Almost one in every four people between the ages of 18 and 50 have at least one tattoo, according to a study published in the Journal of the American Academy of Dermatology. Kelly Hansberry, a student at the University of Maryland, has six. She says they all all have special meaning to her, especially the one on her wrist.
Mom recently passed away, so I got her name on my left wrist because she was left-handed. And they say that your left hand, there's a vein that goes straight from your left hand to your heart, so that's why I got it there.
Not everyone attaches as much meaning to their tattoos. Jacqueline Hodson, also a student, paid $60 for her first tattoo just because she could.
The first one I got was a really small heart, and honestly, I did that kind of on a whim. I mean, I don't regret it now or anything, but it was one of those things where I just turned 18 and I wanted to get one.
Tattoos can cost anywhere from $50 to several hundred dollars depending on size. Besides the steep cost, many employers have policies against visible tattoos. Starbucks assistant manager, Kathy Durden.
Our policy is that you can't have any visible tattoos while you're working. So you can cover them up or you can wear clothing that covers them up.
Kelly Hansberry said policies like these are no surprise.
I didn't want my tattoo to be clearly visible, like when I get out of college and I want to get job interviews and stuff. I want all my tattoos to be able to be covered up with clothes or a simple piece of jewelry so no one can see them, so they're not turning me away for jobs because I'm covered in tattoos.
The study also found that many participants regretted their tattoos. Hansberry, though, does not feel this way.
They're permanent, they're there. I thought I paid for it, I thought about it, what it was, so they're there for the long run.
Though improvements in laser technology have made it easier to get tattoos removed, most said they would cover their tattoos with a different design rather than remove them. I'm Carrie Dandino, Terp Weekly Edition, College Park.
Next week, Carrie will take us inside a local tattoo parlor for part two of her special report, Body Language.
That's all for Chirp Weekly Edition. I'm Susan Friends.
And I'm Eric Schaefer. Thanks for listening. If you'd like to hear more of Chirp Weekly Edition, be sure to check out our website at www.twe.umd.edu.
This has been Chirp Weekly Edition, produced and written by students of the Philip Merrill College of Journalism in cooperation with WMUC Radio. Please join us next week at the same time for a look at the issues in and around the University of Maryland College Park.